Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. Real Estate Coaching Radio is the nation's number one daily radio show for realtors who demand authentic real-time coaching. Get ready for fluff-free, unfiltered, full-strength honesty about what's truly working to get you into action, helping others, and making money now in today's real estate market. Now to our hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
3, 2, 1, and we are back. Welcome to your lovely Friday the 31st. Tomorrow is August 1st. Hopefully you guys know that's the order in which the days fall, the 31st and then followed by the 1st.
Most of the time.
Yeah, I need to be reminded.
That's okay. The most important part about that is Expired Palooza is going to ensue. And as you have been pointing out this week, best thing about that is it's happening on the weekend. So you're more likely to get people home. They're more likely to answer their phones. They're going to have more patience with you. They're not going out the door to go to work. So, you know, I always tease our coaching clients that ignoring expireds is like saying, oh, no, it's okay. You can fall into the hands of a lesser agent than me. I have no problem with that. And by the way, I don't want the commission either.
So like every podcast, it's going to be our podcast. We try to focus on three different aspects, all designed to help you guys educate you, motivate you, and get you into action. And the first one's going to be, we're going to talk a little bit about from some experiences from coaching calls that we had today. And then the second is going to be, we're going to hit you with some headlines, though frankly, I don't think there are any, that are most relevant to you guys. There were from some yesterday. Maybe we should talk about those.
I have one, the competing acts.
And the third thing is, that's kind of boring though.
It's like 3 minutes worth, so they know what's going on.
Okay. All right. That's fine. And the third one's going to be content that we started the other day with regards to working with buyers. Thank you for being patient with us as we sorted out all of our syndication. The podcast, we moved from, like in the podcast world, everything gets loaded into iTunes, and then iTunes syndicates the podcast to all the different places. At least that's how it's supposed to work. But what's happened is the podcasting realm has gotten so big. Now there's a whole bunch of different competing companies that are all trying to essentially become like channels for podcasts. And so what you do is you create your podcast, which is easy. You know, we're doing it now. And then you submit it to iTunes. And then iTunes then will submit it to maybe 3 or 4 other podcasts. But all the others, of which now there's probably like maybe 12 or 15 you have to pay attention to, Spotify, things like that. Then you have to manually upload those or get those other syndicators to accept your RSS feed from your podcast. I'm giving guys some nerdy information because, as we always say, every one of you guys should have a podcast because podcasting is going to become, it already is without a doubt, the most influential media form on planet Earth. Matter of fact, there's a lot of people that are saying that podcasting is the biggest thing in essentially in, you know, the evolution of the dissemination of information since the Gutenberg press. And the Gutenberg press was basically like the first copier in essence. It made it so that they could actually replicate the written word and, you know, make books and whatnot. And so that's, you guys can understand, that took the information from just the people who had a book back in the olden days was always handwritten and, you know, not very many people had them. They're usually held in monasteries and most people didn't know how to read and write and the whole thing. Well, then boom, the Gutenberg press comes along and now we can all of a sudden start, you know, syndicating using a modern word, books, and more people can learn to read and write and, you know, evolution of man type of thing. Well, the same thing, it could be argued, is happening with podcasts right now. And the reason that podcasting is dominating over even video is because everybody can listen to a podcast in the background, which is frankly how I do it most of the time. And Julie does as well. So you could be, you know, folding laundry or whatever, and you can have a podcast on in the background. And podcasts have become something that people listen to at regularly scheduled times of the day. When they're working out, they listen to, you know, timandjulieharris.com. When they're, you know, when they're driving to work, they're listening to Joe Rogan. When they're coming home from work, they might be listening to something like, I don't know, NPR or something. You guys get the gist of it. But podcasting is replacing normal media outlets. And here's something else that I think is very fascinating for me to watch. Because Julie and I have been podcasting and syndicating since 2007 or 2008, even before people knew what the word was. But the other thing that's really fascinating is the number of the nature of podcasts itself is becoming less and less formal. So a normal, like when you guys, one of the things that anyone says to me when they're thinking about starting a podcast, that they always hit a wall of, oh my gosh, I need to know how to use all this technology. I need to, you know how to do all this audio editing and just all this stuff. You don't need to know how to do any of that stuff. And in essence, you just basically run a podcast straight through. Don't go back and edit. If there's a dog barking in the background, leave the dog in. What are you pointing at?
One of our coaching clients' podcasts.
Oh, good. Whose podcast is it?
James Miller and his dad, Amelia Island Real Estate Show.
Oh, good.
Lots of great topics. Amelia Island in a hot seller's market. Buyers are working remotely. All kinds of great topics.
That's awesome. Yeah, they took our advice. And that's one of Julie's personal coaching clients. They're also part of our EXP family. So everyone listening needs to do a podcast. You should, and don't worry about, like, for example, even the content. Don't worry about overthinking anything. You eventually will find your voice and you'll find your stride. But here's the thing I think will take a lot of pressure off. Just like, you know, what Julie and I do, that's how people want their podcast. They want to feel, ultimately, they don't want to feel like they're listening to a formal, you know, presentation necessarily. That's the old way of thinking about it. And that's frankly the more laborious way of thinking about it, because then you have to have a producer, then you have to have somebody that's going to do commercials, and you want to go back and edit it. You might want to, you know, turn up the gain. You want to, might, one person's not loud enough, one person's, you, all that Mickey Mouse. Screw all that.
Over-engineer it. And it's not as authentic, I think.
Right. That's what people like.
You know, feeling like you know somebody. Most of the podcasts we listen to, at least I feel like we know them. They're not really friends, but they're like podcast friends, right?
But that's the moral of the story. Yeah. So when you're doing your podcast, it's helpful, obviously, to do it with another person. But if you have to start out by just having somebody, you know, just do it yourself, that's fine. And then eventually you can do your podcast, maybe just have people call in and do interview-based. Interview-based is the easiest to do fundamentally, because the person you're interviewing provides the content. But unless you yourself are going to do interviews like, say, Joe Rogan does, where Joe will call them out on their bullshit and he's not even trying to be, he's trying to be a civil host, a nice guest, and, you know, in terms of he's trying to treat them respectfully because they're kind of a guest in his house. But at the same time, he'll reel them back in and call them out if they just try to hit some sort of talking points that don't really, you know, jive with, you know, reality. And I do that too. And when Julie and I interview people, and we tell them ahead of time, we tell them that, you know, you can't come to our show with an agenda, and you have to be prepared to defend what you say.
Well, and you do a little pre-show interview also with many of them as you get to know them. So you kind of know what you're signing up for.
But here's what I discovered, just on a side from doing interviews in the past. Most people suck at conversation.
Yeah.
Most people are terrible at it. And what they do is they have their talking points. And especially real estate people, they'll have their like three or four talking points. And then soon as you challenge them on any of their points, like I'll give you the ones that I always like to go after because they're indefensible, is basically the validity of teams, the validity of buying buyer leads, the validity of branding, all that stuff. And when I had someone on the pod, when someone wants to be on our podcast, it's so hilarious to me. We get probably, I bet on average per day, I get 10 solicitations for people wanting to be on our podcast. They come usually through intermediaries, usually through these companies that people hire to try to get them on, you know, like PR agencies. So I'll get a pitch for someone to be on our podcast, and I can tell they've never listened to our podcast before, because the person that supposedly wants to be on our podcast wants to talk about how to scale your expansion team or something like that, which you guys know, hopefully longtime listeners know, look, we'll talk about that until the cows come home. But if you're not prepared to talk about why those, you know, essentially that's not a financially viable business model, if you're not prepared to talk about profitability, if not prepared to talk about, you know, all that, then why, you know, you're walking into a minefield being on our show. And so sometimes when I get somebody who's a big name that wants to talk about, you know, teams and branding or whatever, and this is somebody that you guys might know from HGTV or whatnot, I will tell them ahead of time that I'm going to challenge them, and I'm going to tell them what my questions are going to be. And 99% of the time they choose not to be on the podcast because they know that those particular points will be gotchas. And I'm not going to let someone, you know, essentially preach an agenda to all of you guys that I know is bullshit. And so anyway, that the point of all this is that podcasting, as Julie just said, a really good podcast, and the ones you're going to be attracted to too, aren't these big formalized presentations. They're not stump speeches. They're real communication, real conversations that are happening between people with all the little, you know, inflections not edited out. all the little stupid contradictions and the things that people say and all the rest of it, you know, stumbling over words, using bad grammar or whatever. You know, can you use bad grammar speaking though? I don't think you can. That's only
sure
right.
You can.
Well,
you can
see how
things incorrectly.
Right. See how I just did that intentionally to see if Julia's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I asked if I could use bad grammar by asking if you can use bad grammar because she's actually screwing on her phone right now.
You shouldn't use bad grammar, but you can if you'd like.
I know. Okay. Well, so the point of all this, guys, is definitely want to start doing a podcast. Because podcasting going forward, and just use the example Julie just gave you, is going to be what will provide a incredible long tail stream of business for you. And start out just by talking about what you want to talk about. Start out by talking about what interests you. You know, if you want to have a real estate podcast, that's great, but I'll suggest you go with a really tight niche like Amelia Island, what our coaching clients are doing, or something like that. And I imagine inside Amelia Island, I know the area that they specialize in is an area called the Plantations.
That's true.
And they probably focus most of their best podcasting on that particular area. And get this, probably 50% of the owners in the Plantations condos and houses don't live there. So they're able to listen to these podcasts and they're living in some other part of the world, feeling like they're connected to what's actually, you know, boots on the ground. You guys see the power of this?
Yeah, I listened to one, I think it's called Block and Lot or Lot and Block about Manhattan real estate. And, you know, it's so different than the rest of the country. I get lots of different interesting things, but he keeps it just Manhattan and just the different types of ownerships, co-ops, apartments, et cetera.
Yeah.
And his focus is on different ways of winning and purchasing and all the different changes that New York rolls out. It's just, I mean, it's kind of nerdy, but it's interesting.
No, it is nerdy.
But to your point, keep it kind of in your wheelhouse, but have enough to talk about.
Right. And you should have some really tight calls to action in there. Because the point of doing a podcast is, from a business perspective, is obviously to provide overwhelming value. But you can ask the people to do business with you. If you just disseminate the information and you don't give them a CTA, a call to action, a reason to reach out to you, they're not going to. You have to tell people to call you. You have to tell people that I want to do business with you. Otherwise, they're going to assume because you didn't ask that you're not interested. That's true in everything, but it's especially true on podcasting because they're just going to assume you're just too busy and you'd never want to do business with them. When Julie and I were coaching some of the people from Bravo TV, from the TV shows, it was so funny to me that one of their biggest issues wasn't that they didn't want to do business with anybody who wanted to do business with them. The perception that they had to constantly overcome is that they were too busy to do business. And who was the guy from Puerto Rico, actually, when I was talking with him?
Luis Ortiz.
So Luis Ortiz had that problem, and he was doing primarily leasing at the time he was on that show. He wasn't even selling properties. And so I had to have, you know, he and I had some calls about how he could start in New York, how he could start going after notice of defaults and distressed real estate and stuff like that, which is a huge opportunity in New York City, which goes back to the original point Julie was making before I got my podcasting tangent. Make sure that you're looking and paying attention to the expireds in your marketplace. So I'm on a coaching call this morning with a great agent who just sold a $5.5 million house in Charleston.
Nice job.
And LeGrand.
Congrats.
And we were talking about, okay, what can he do to make the most of that, you know, the sale? And we were talking about the fact in this particular, it was an island, right?
Mm-hmm.
How it was locked up by three or four other old guard agents and whatever. And I said, on the coaching call, I had him go to his MLS, which he did, and I wanted him to tell me how many expireds there were. And this is a market where there are, in his words and everyone's word, there's no listings, there's no inventory, there's no expireds, everything sells in 22 seconds, it's all selling off market, blah, blah, blah. All right, so with this one particular island, which is really popular and stuff sells, just like I just said, that's the perception of it. Since the beginning of the year, there were over 700 expireds.
Wow.
And he didn't even know about it.
Holy cow.
Over 700 opportunities. And this was a small island to list properties.
Yeah.
And he'd never looked.
So let's say he was able to list 1% of that. I mean, that's incredible.
I know.
You don't even need that many to work out. That's
here's amazing. The best part. The sale he just participated in, he brought the buyer, was the highest sale on the island ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he just hit the highest sale on the island ever. And there's 700 expired, probably, I'm guessing.
That'd be something to talk about.
How many of those have gotten relisted? Who, you know, he'd have to check and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But today is the last day of the month, and tomorrow is the first day of the month, which means, as Julie said, expired palooza. There's always a peak of expireds. So those of you who are in our premier coaching program, use our expired script. It's not just enough to have the script. You have to listen to the audio training we do so we can give you all the, you know, essentially the nuanced approaches between between just reading the script and making the script work. Reading the script is, and you know, essentially being coached to use the script and have in the actual words in front of you are not the same thing. That's it's a difference between watching a video and having a personal trainer. You know, I can watch videos on my iPhone and go to the gym when it opens again, and I can know how to do the moves. But the thing is there's nobody watching me to know whether or not I'm actually doing the moves correctly. Mm-hmm. Like I might be trying to do some sort of, you know, lifting weight, whatever, on some torture device over at the gym, but I don't know that I'm not standing up straight, or I don't know. I mean, that's the reason there's mirrors in gym so you can look at yourself, but I might be arching my back when I'm not supposed to be, actually hurting myself, that kind of thing. And that's what a trainer's supposed to do. They're supposed to go in there and give you the nuanced approaches to make you better at what you're supposed to be doing so you can get results faster. That's really simply what a coach does, or that's essentially what you should be considering doing if you want to move your business forward faster. I do it. Julie does it. All the smartest, you know, most successful people on planet Earth always have coaches for whatever they're trying to perfect because it shortens the learning curve. There is no hack. There is no shortcut in life. But if there is, it's hiring somebody who's been there first to help you get there quickest. So if you're interested in learning more about our coaching program, why don't you guys text the word Harris to 31996. Text the word Harris to 31996. And when you do, we're going to text you back we're going to text you back a link that you then can download. It's three free books: The Real Estate Treasure Map, Think and Grow Rich for Real Estate, and your 12-month lead generation plan. Oh, there's a fourth one. Oh, I said it already. Real Estate Treasure Map. Mm-hmm. They're all there, and you can download those books. And those are an excellent, you know, way for you to essentially, if you're listening to us for the first time, this is definitely, those series of books are definitely things you need to embrace immediately, especially The Real Estate Treasure Map. So just text the word Harris to 31996. And also, thank you for those of you who are being so supportive of our book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It continues to be one of the best-selling real estate books of all time and nearly 400 five-star reviews. So thanks for that. The book is called Harris Rules if you've not picked up the book yet. So there it is. Now we're going to talk next. Julie, let's just skip the headlines for today.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So we're going to talk now about what we were talking about previously, which is talking about essentially the buyer process. Mm-hmm. And what we're hoping to do is demystify a lot of the, you know, obviously our coaching program focuses on working with sellers, becoming, you know, a powerful listing agent. That's really that's what we want you guys all having as your North Star. But working with buyers is going to be a great thing for everyone to do. Our busiest, most successful listing agents with consistently 20 to 30 listings who really don't have to work buyers if they didn't want to, we always want them to have two or three AAA, really great, ideally high-end buyers in their back pockets because A, it keeps them in front of the market. They'll know exactly what's happening in the market. You really, when you're working with sellers and you're just looking in the MLS at what's sold, you're just using your comp data from, you know, previous sale history, you're not on the leading edge of what's happening in the market. So the problem with, you know, a lot of top listing agents is if they stop working with buyers, they're not at the very leading edge of what's happening in the marketplace as far as preferential, you know, changes. And there's little nuanced things it's sort of bizarre to understand why things happen the way they do. But you might have over a series of like just 90 days, floor plan preferences start to change. There might be like, for example, I remember very clearly when, Julie, you remember white cabinets and kitchens?
Yeah, that was
nobody
the thing.
Puts, you know, I, white cabinets.
And before that, it was oak.
It was oak, yeah. You know? And then people would have this orange oak cabinets. You guys remember that back in the 80s and the 90s? And how about, what was the horrible green in the 70s?
Oh, yes, and goldenrod. You right. know, you do see the trends, and you also see things that you're not going to see if you're not out there actively showing property. You might know about, you know, you might not find out about a new construction project that's just down the road that's not in the MLS and it's starting to suck the life out of this resale
right.
market. You know, I think that, and I love our powerful listing agents, and I love that they have the freedom to say, you know, I'm only a listing agent. But I also caution them that your pricing brain slips a lot too.
That's right.
It's much more powerful to see things in person as well as getting buyers' impressions of what they see in person. You know, when people are getting ready to buy houses, of course, they're watching HGTV and Bravo and housing shows and getting housing magazines. And they're probably more frosty about what's hot than you are because they're actively in it. And I think that is very valuable to have at least two or three, as you said, very motivated, very qualified, ready to rumble buyers at all times.
Ideally, your sellers that have basically, the houses are sold and they're looking right. for a place to buy because you know they're motivated and they have a time frame. You guys yes. go down. I'm sure I don't have to talk very many of you into knowing how to differentiate a really motivated buyer from one that's not motivated. Hopefully, you guys are all experiencing really great motivated buyers right now. And hopefully all those motivated buyers are your current sellers who are about to close.
Ideally, yes.
Yeah. But again, here's another, just to emphasize Julie's point. If you stop working with buyers and you only work on sellers, and I realize some of you are seeing that as dream life scenario, what I just described,
right.
but you can't give up buyers in that you will, as just listen to what she said, you will lose touch with what the market is actually as it's changing. So you could have a listing appointment this weekend. Okay, and there was a house that just sold or maybe hasn't sold and you'd never been in it, and the seller is going to ask you a specific question, or at least you should know why that house is or isn't a comp. And if you've never been in it, you're not going to know that the real problem with the house is the whole house smells like cat pee or some little weird things happening.
It could be a comp for your next listing anyway.
Or you might walk into a listing appointment. This is the most likely scenario in a market like what we're headed into. And you might have it in your mind that the seller's house is worth, $599 or whatever. And you, because you were just showing properties to a very motivated, family of buyers, and you were looking at that very price range, your CMA told you the house was worth $599, but because you were just out showing competition for that house, you know the house in this market, because the prices are falling, is only worth $575.
Yeah, because what you just showed hasn't sold yet.
That's right. And what you just showed is actually nicer than the house that you're about to list.
It's really important.
And you wouldn't have known that because obviously you weren't out there looking at property. So this is really critical.
Well, we use a kind of a unfair advantage, shall we say, with our coaching clients, called the instant showing feedback card, which is also kind of secretly prospecting should that listing actually, expire. There's lots of little things that are kind of add-on advantages you have. We've got lots of stories of our clients actually running into listing opportunity while they're out showing buyers.
Right.
People see them actively out there.
We're not suggesting, obviously, you solicit a listed property.
No,
but what the instant showing feedback card is part of our coaching company. We give you guys it's a card that you leave. So a lot of good listing agents are supposed to ask for feedback after the showing to give to the buyer. And usually that entails some sort of series of annoying phone calls or emails or whatever. And what we will suggest you do is you leave a card. It's not designed to solicit the listing, but it just gives instant feedback on
which
the showing.
Which you're supposed to be doing anyway.
You have the buyers leave the feedback, which again, sometimes if that listing's about to expire, the seller's really going to appreciate that and might think of you.
Yes.
All right, so moving forward, with regards to the buyer process, I don't think we need to drill down anymore on why they need to always have a few buyers in their repertoire,
smart.
Their quiver. Okay, so the next process is pre-qualifying the buyers. And the pre-qualifying script for working with buyers, we're going to go through the first three questions. Can you pull it up again?
Yep, hang on a second.
I have it obviously memorized because Julie and I wrote it.
You can get started.
We wrote it years ago. So the different scenarios where buyers are going to be reaching out to you. This is assuming this is not a buyer you already have because you've got their house listed. One of the best buyer lead attraction tools known to man is 1-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com. 1-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com. You guys should all check that out. 1-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com. So let's say, for example, you get a call from a buyer. And maybe it's calling 3-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com, or maybe it's they're calling off a sign. And let me take a sidestep and I'll go back in and focus on the script. Your best buyers are not internet buyers. Generally speaking, those are your worst buyers because everyone starts out on the internet and then they start honing in and looking in as they drive through neighborhoods. That's how buyers search. Now, in the upper end markets, you're going to find it's even more refined. But just for the generalized presentation here, that's the thing to remember is internet buyer leads. One of the reasons that generally speaking, they're not that great is because the buyers are just generally not that motivated because they're in the beginning stages of looking. Back when some of you will remember this, and maybe in some markets you guys still see these at grocery stores and whatnot, there used to be those Homes magazines. Well, Homes magazines buyers have become internet buyers basically. So the internet's done away with those Homes magazines and all but the smallest markets. And those Homes magazines buyer leads were equally as unmotivated because they were just getting ready to start thinking about maybe someday buying a house or selling a house for that matter. So your best leads are always the people driving the neighborhood, because once they're driving the neighborhood, they probably they're They definitely have a deadline in mind. They've been looking for a while. They've decided they want to live in, you know, Oakhurst subdivision or, you know, White Tree subdivision.
They're watching the neighborhood.
Right. They're watching the neighborhood. Yeah. They're going to open houses. They're driving through and they're stalking the local parks to see how many kids are there. They're looking at school buses. They're really getting a sense of what it'd be like to live there. Those are your motivated buyers, and those types of buyers you're going to get from open houses, but you're also going to capture them if you're using 800 Home Hotline on all the signs. If you don't have any listings in a particular neighborhood that you want to start getting listings in, use 800homehotline.com and then ask the listing agents, ideally if some of them are in your office, that would be great. If you can put a sign writer on their sign and just go to that 1-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com and check out the sign writer example. Or you can just put a secondary corrugated plastic sign in their yard that says for free 24-hour record info on this house. And then it's going to say call 1-800-555-1212 and then whatever extension. And then there's going to be a recording describing the house. What that is really is a tool to designed to, yes, give them information on the property, but an instant information on the property. And they can also have the information texted to them. But really the benefit to you is anytime they call it, you're going to be able to caller ID them. And the system's going to text you and let you know that this person from this phone number just called on this house. You guys following me on all this? I know I'm going through this relatively quick because I assume that most of you are just going to go to 1-800-HOME-HOTLINE.com and check it out.
And the scripts are there too.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to write everything that Tim just said.
But here's the process. And the reason I have this memorized is because when Julie and I were selling hundreds of homes per year, we did have agents that worked for us as, you know, buyer's agents. But one of the things I quickly learned was when you delegate pre-qualifying, especially your upper end listings, you're going to lose all kinds of business because no matter what, the people you hire to pre-qualify are never going to be as effective as you. So some of the last things we ever suggest, if you never delegate these things, it's great. Don't delegate pre-qualifying and don't delegate going on listing appointments. And I know, again, the current zeitgeist is you give up both, but the inefficiencies that essentially delegating those two important things introduces to your real estate business results in a massive drop in net profit. So yes, that means you might not have to pre-qualify people anymore. And yes, that might mean you might not have to go on listing appointments anymore. But it also is going to mean that your crappy profit's going to get crappier because the inefficiencies that come from expecting someone to do a high-end job.
We had an email last week from a coaching client that described exactly what you just said. I don't know if you remember that because we get so many emails. But she was saying that she's got all this lead generation in place. She knows how to make the phone ring. But she was basically playing a round robin with buyer's agents and, you know, today's your day for lead conversion, tomorrow's my day for lead conversion. They didn't do it with urgency. They didn't use a script. So she's like, I'm generating all these leads and I'm not getting any results. And so, what did she say? She said it was like running a faucet full of money down the drain.
Well.
And so then she was like, should I just hire a VA to do it? And, you know, it's like, no, you do it and then you can disseminate who gets which leads. And in fact, if you're going to maybe not even have buyer's agents but have referral agents, you can charge them more because it's pre-qualified, ready to rumble. The script is done. You know their financing. You know, it's much better to do it yourself. That's, to your point, one of the last things you should ever give up.
Because, and you guys are going to listen when we go through our script, is because you're going to lose all your listing leads. And as far as having buyer agents, I have looked at countless profit and loss statements for teams. And I'm going to tell you what I tell 99% of them. And you guys aren't going to like this, especially if you're part of the team, the religion of teams, right? Because teams and, you know, all this crap has become somewhat like a religion. People are absolutely pissed and offended when you say anything against the idea that this business model that they're trying to, you know, create is flawed. It is flawed. It's terrible, especially if you're trying to have profit in your business. If you were, and I've never found an example where this wasn't true, and I know I'm going to get some email or text where someone's going to argue with me, and that's fine. Argue away. I've never gone over someone's profit and loss statement where it was not more profitable for them to refer all their buyers out after they had been pre-qualified and all the listing leads were pulled out, refer those buyers out to other agents that in their marketplace for a 35% or a 30% referral fee. I have yet to find an example where that was not more profitable referring the buyer leads out than trying to build a buyer's agent staff and a buyer's agent team. Now, if you're part of eXp, what I just gave you was a great, great system for you to go about starting to add people to your revenue share group by essentially putting together a group of agents that you trust to do a great job and make them part of your referral team, but they have to be part of eXp. I mean, there's another little side benefit if you're part of eXp. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you guys want to learn about more about eXp Realty, without a doubt, it is going to be the world's most dominant real estate brokerage. And I said the world. And the expansion internationally, I'm hearing rumors and I'm seeing them hire up people. The eXp Realty is going to go so fast across Latin America. It's going to start spreading all over anywhere in Europe that English is spoken, which is, by the way, everywhere in Europe. You can go to Poland. You can go to Italy. Well, not rural Italy, but you can go to Germany. You can go to everywhere in Europe. They speak their native tongue, but they all are taught in grade school how to speak English as well. So you're going to see eXp expanding so fast. If you're interested in learning more about eXp Realty, because it is without a doubt the single best business opportunity of most of our lifetimes, I made it super simple for you. Just text the word EXP to 31996. Text the word EXP to 31996. And when you do, we're going to text you back a quick 9-minute video. Watch the video. You're going to have a lot of your questions answered, and then you can have a call with someone to answer any follow-up questions and maybe move forward with us at EXP. All right, so before I got on the EXP tangent, what was the what were we saying?
Well, we were talking about 800 Home Hotline. We were talking about how your best buyers are not internet
buyers. Referring out your buyers and teams, right?
Yes, and that your best buyers are the ones driving by. They know the neighborhoods. I have a quick coaching story about that from yesterday. A great coaching client in Paducah, Kentucky, Sarah Gibson. Okay, so she's got a new listing. She's putting a lockbox on the front door. Guy parks his, actually, he was already in the driveway. She's like, who is this guy in this truck? So she's doing the lockbox. He walks up, he introduces himself. He says, I've been watching what this homeowner has been doing. I saw the house before they rehabbed it. Me and my wife are super interested in it. Do you mind if I walk through? He even said, just so you know, I'm already working with another agent. You know, he was like totally, he told her about his financing, told her about his agent. Like, this guy is ready to buy that house. And she's like, sure, come on in. You know, he was literally like right there. He beat her to it.
Right.
And she's putting a lockbox on. So I don't know whether he ended up being a buyer or not, but I bet he was.
So as far as like the buyers and pre-qualifying, the reason that you don't want to delegate pre-qualifying, you don't want to delegate to a VA or you don't want to delegate to some, you know, wannabe successful agent is because you're going to lose listing leads like you cannot possibly believe. And so here's the gist of the script. And whether you're using this from someone calling you directly or you know, they left, you know, a voicemail for you or whether they're calling 3-800 Home Hotline, it does not matter how you got the lead. And I want you guys to completely forget all this bullshit about all these stupid rules that people preach. If someone texts you, you're only supposed to text them back. If someone emails you, you're only supposed to email them back. Just forget all that. It's all a bunch of crap. Here's the bottom line. You call everyone back. Okay, call everyone back, voice to voice. If they send you to voicemail, fine, but call people back. Don't set up all these rules that are just basically thinly disguised, you know, mechanisms so that you don't actually have to do the real work of real estate, which is learning how to have, you know, professional conversations with people.
It's creative avoidance.
So if someone's calling the 800 Home Hotline, for example, here's the script. Here's the first 3 or 4 lines. And I know this because I used to say it a billion times. And I haven't said this, you know, professionally speaking to an actual client forever, but it still works because this is what we coach all of our clients to say. Ring, ring, hello. I'm sorry. Somebody just called the 800 Home Hotline. They listened to information about the house and they're parked in front of it and they see the sign and then they call the 800 Home Hotline number or they text it. It doesn't matter. And then here's what they're going to hear. You're calling about 123 Elm Street. It's a 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath home with a private backyard. It recently remodeled kitchens and bathrooms and HVAC, newer roof in 2012 or whatever. The house is in perfect condition, ready to move in, in near perfect condition, ready to move in. The house is currently priced in the mid 500s, right? And for more information, press 0, you know, that kind of thing. And then thank you for calling about 123 Elm Street. That's it. And then what's going to happen is probably maybe 10% are going to press 0 for more information. But you're going to call and you are going to call every single one of them back because here's what's happening. If you noticed in the recording, I did not give them the price. I gave them the price range. Now, you don't want to put the price in the recording for several reasons. And the biggest one is you want to basically not have to go there and update the audio every time you change the price. You guys are spoiled thinking houses sell themselves in 22 seconds. But in this new market, they're not going to. And so that price, that the original house and priced at $550 is going to be, you know, $529 in 2 weeks.
Well,
so,
you also don't lose the buyer, because maybe they're a $510 buyer and you're at $540. You can say mid-500s.
That's right.
You don't lose their interest.
Those two reasons. So that's the reason that you don't want to ever say. So you want to do low 500s, mid-500s, upper 500s. You don't actually want to say the actual price. The other reason is because they don't know the actual price and they're still curious, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the next key. And this is the other thing that agents always screw up on when, you know, chasing buyers, because this is all about chasing buyers. And our hidden agenda, not so hidden, is always to pull out the sellers. Is you have to have what Julie and I have termed, copywritten, trademark, don't steal it, called furiously fast lead follow-up. So a furiously fast lead follow-up means you call every single lead back within like moments. No, not a minute or 2 minutes. Again, I know there's people that have all these stupid rules.
And not texting.
You're not texting. And not, don't put them into drip campaigns. Guys, listen, all that stuff is a bunch of procrastinating crap. Drip campaigns don't work. Long-term lead follow-up, you know, is not worth doing. If you can't pre-qualify them for motivation and they're not motivated to buy within ideally or transact, you know, that's my stupid watch, isn't it?
I think so.
Isn't that funny?
Was it scam likely again?
Yeah. <that's, laughs> you want to tell that story?
Well, quickly. You know, Zoe's often playing with my phone or looking at videos or something, and I often get scam likely calling, and I just hit delete or whatever if I'm feeling obnoxious.
What's every night, basically?
I'll say I'm on my way or something. And so one day she goes, is scam likely a coaching client? Why don't you like her? You never take her call. I'm like, scam likely is just not a good client.
So the scam likely thing, when we answer it, because I get the call too, it's something in Chinese.
And it always is something, who knows what's going on.
Yeah, and so Julie and I, you know how when you guys get a message, you can send back an SMS and they're pre-written messages. Well, so Julie and I text back, we're on our way. See you there.
See you there.
You know,
bye-bye.
Who knows what it is? We don't speak Chinese.
No.
Anyway, so that was scam likely.
Yep. Right on time.
Well, so you call these people back, and your goal is to call them back immediately. And by immediately, it's immediately. And you don't want to put them in a drip campaign. You don't want to put them in a long-term lead follow-up. Look, if you guys want to do that because you're hoping and praying that that person somehow is going to raise their hand eventually and do a transaction with you, go for it. But I want you to put absolutely no effort or emotional, you know, hoping and praying that those are going to materialize into something. They never have.
Well, and you really shouldn't even do that unless you've actually talked to them and
that's
have
right.
something to go on. Otherwise, you might as well put the whole phone book into your database.
But what weak agents do is they get these weak leads from bot leads from like Facebook. So they get weak agents buying weak leads.
Yes.
And then they're putting these weak leads into these weak lead follow-up programs, you know, as in WEAK. And then they're hoping and praying that sometimes those people miraculously raise their hand. And they celebrate when they're able to sort of, you know, surreptitiously. Oh, I missed the P.
Pretty close.
Yeah, close enough. I need more caffeine.
You're using your Ask Julie again.
You're looking at me like, are you daft?
No.
The answer is yes, it's Friday. I am daft, Julie. You don't have to look at me.
That's all right. No more caffeine.
Physically. Well, so, yeah, so you look at, for example, what was I just seeing how I got off my. See, this is the problem with the Friday shows.
Surreptitiously was where you got stuck.
I know, but what was the point of that?
We just lost our train of thought. That's too distracting.
Because scam likely's tried to call again.
Well, so you were kind of midway through the buyer conversion script, which also is kind of a buyer pre-qualification script. Point being that you call them immediately with urgency and you ask good questions so you can find out
how serious
they are. That way you don't just throw them all in your database and hope for the best.
So the reason that long-term lead follow-up doesn't work, and the reason, even when you guys have these fancy systems that basically report to you when they've opened your email or they've watched a video and whatever, because that doesn't mean anything. Who cares? If you can't get them on the phone and actually pre-qualify them and find out if they have a house to sell, find out what their time frame is, and if you aren't asking the hard questions to determine their actual motivation, then why are you keeping them around? And you guys, it's shocking to me. You put value on leads. Leads have no value. And by the way, the same leads you have, 1,000 other agents have those same leads. I'm going to say that again because those two points are really important. Leads themselves have no value. A lead is worthless unless you pre-qualify the lead for motivation. Now, a motivated lead, a motivated pre-qualified lead, that has value. But a lead as just a name and a phone number on a piece of paper, they're complete crap. And those of you guys who buy leads from any of the portals, you know, Zillow or whatever, or you're generating your own leads, just because you fill out a form, you know, they filled out a form on Facebook, a leads funnel thing, and you think that lead has value, or you're just fooling yourself. And the reason you do this, if you want to cut through your own malarkey, is because you don't want to actually do the real work of real estate, which is learning how to pick up the phone and have real conversations. You don't want to have furiously fast lead follow-up. You think that there's something wrong with the idea that you have to be beholden to calling people back right away and asking them tough questions that will help sift and sort whether or not they're legitimate buyers or not.
Well, you know what's funny about that is the best buyers who really are motivated and have it together, either with cash or financing, they're like down the pipe with that. They actually want to talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, evidence of that is when, and this still happens to this day, when you call back with urgency, whether it's your 800 home hotline or not, they're always like, are you a recording? Are you for real?
Yeah. Well, like, let's get to it then.
You know, I mean, it's almost like they don't believe it's a real person.
Well, you're getting to it. So you want to be the buyer?
Sure.
Okay. So I'm say, ring, ring. No, you're calling me.
I'm calling you.
Yeah.
Ring, ring.
Hello?
Hi. I'm calling about 123 Elm Street. I just went past it, and I was just wondering about the price.
You know, that's a terrific property. Everybody's calling about that one, it seems. Let me look that one up on the computer to make sure it's still listed and see what the current price is. Oh, by the way, which house in the neighborhood are you thinking about selling?
Oh, well, I live in the neighborhood, like, you know, right next door, and I'm not really sure what I'm going to do yet.
Okay, terrific. And then you pick up the rest of the script. I'm going to stop right there. So our buyer script, and what we want you guys to do is we want you to treat every single buyer lead as if they're also a seller in hiding. Because depending on your price range, that is going to be true. 99%, if you're dealing in the midland or the upper end price range, now if you're dealing in the upper end price range, those people won't have to sell before they buy. But if you're dealing in really where most of you are, 99% of you are going to be dealing with people that present as buyers, but they're actually sellers. And furthermore, they can't buy unless they sell. But because you guys don't know how to have the seller conversation with them, you waste too much time focusing on the wrong end of the transaction, which is the buyer side.
Or they lose the buyer before they even get to that question. You know, they just answer the question, what's the price? So let's rewind for a second. You said, you know, hi, how's it going? I said, you know, I'm calling on 123 Elm Street. What's the price?
Right. And if I just say $499.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe I'm not even going to tell you that I'm only a $399 buyer. I'm just going to say, okay, thanks, bye.
And why is the asking the question, by the way, which house in the neighborhood are you thinking about selling? You ask that question right there. And our entire script, pull the script up. There's a couple other little fun things that are halfway down the script. Our entire script is designed to work like that. And using psychology, it's making it so the psychology of sales is working on your behalf. And Julie and I wrote this and refined it. And our goal was to make it so you don't have to think. You just ask the questions. I mean, I'm looking at the script right now. And you read the questions and you write in the answers to what they say. And then you use that for, you know, essentially keeping track of them as a lead going forward. That's the whole point of this damn script.
Well, so the pre-qualification is actually embedded in the conversion script.
That's
the point. Okay?
That's the fun part.
So, for example, your next question is, how long have you been looking for your home?
Right.
And then we also talk about, and I love this one because it's kind of a different way of asking if you're working with an agent. I assume because you're calling me directly, you're not already working with another real estate
agent. Okay, slow down. Did you hear how she asked that question?
Yeah.
So the next question is, Julie, it's nice to meet you. I'm looking it up on the computer. And let's just say Julie says she doesn't have a house to sell in the neighborhood. Okay, so she's a first-time buyer or whatever. Or she sold her house out of state and she's relocating. Okay, perfect. And then I'm going to say, the next question is how long you've been looking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I've been looking for the past 90 days. And then you say, you don't want to ask the question, are you working with an agent? That is a weak question that any moderately sophisticated buyer is going to know the answer is yes, because then they're going to get you to shut up and just give them the information and get off the phone, right? So the way to ask the question is, and I assume because you're calling me directly, you're not working with another agent. When you ask the question like this, they're actually going to tell you the truth. If you ask the question the other way, they're going to tell you just whatever it takes to get you off the phone.
I know, it's magic.
It's psychology.
It's a scripting thing, but it works so well.
It's the same reason that the second question is, everyone's calling about that house. It's a terrific property. Oh, by the way, which house in the neighborhood are you thinking about selling? When you ask that question at the top of the script, when you first start that conversation with them, they're not going to lie to you. They're going to tell you the truth because they weren't expecting that question,
yes.
So they won't be mentally, emotionally
That's
prepared
why it's so
for
early
it.
In the
right.
Script.
That's the reason we put it up there, because what most of you do is you're not professional and you have, frankly, bad training, and the bad trainers have told you to say dumb things where you're supposed to somehow friend up and bond with this buyer.
They fart around with mirroring and matching for 20 minutes, and then maybe they have the guts to ask that question.
You have a dog? I have a dog. You're a human? I'm a human. You live in a house? I live in a house. We're perfect for each other. I can work with you. And then, like, you know, an hour later, they then somehow meander into a conversation about the house the seller has to sell. Do you think the buyers and the sellers want to, waste their time getting to know you like that? You guys are just acting unprofessionally like that because you don't know how else to act. Can you imagine walking into your dentist's office? I mean, think about how it actually means and what it actually is to work with a professional. You walk in. You go up to the counter, you fill out forms and paperwork, you sit your ass back down in the chair, you have a clipboard full of crap you fill out, and then you sit there, and then you go into the doctor, and there's a very expected procedure as to how things are supposed to work. Same thing when working with any professional. Any service provider is going to have a system, not with agents.
Yeah, and you don't have a choice either. You will not be seeing the doctor without those forms filled out.
That's right. And
there's
that's
no negotiating.
Right, and that's the approach that we want you guys to at least consider taking. This is the reason. This is the process that they have to go through for you to work with them. And if they don't want to answer these questions, if they're just wasting time and you end up losing a lead, good. Your job is not collect leads. The more leads, when we have a coaching client, and this is, again, this time of year, we always get a lot of these guys. Guys and gals, okay, tell me about your business. How many leads do you have? I have, and it's usually some ridiculous number. And then they say, well, I have 32 leads. Okay, and how many? And then I have another 700 leads in my drip follow-up cam.
I had somebody tell me 2,000 ones.
Yeah, people brag about it.
I literally, for like 30 seconds, I didn't know what to say. 2,000? What are you just putting everybody in your drip campaign? Yep, for the past 3 years.
That's how I handle my leads. It's the race to, this analytical, weak sales, bad training, Mickey Mouse, where your goal is to somehow form these huge databases or these huge lead lists where then you just drip campaign crap at them till the cows come home. But you guys, I said it before, I'll say it again. Leads have no value and everyone else has your leads. That's the truth.
Yeah.
You think that buyer, that seller is only on your list? You guys are dropping off tchotchkes for your centers of influence and past clients. You've heard us on this podcast before talking about the hilarity of, like the pumpkin pie things in November. Julie and I were at a real estate seminar once, and they broke into masterminds, and Julie and I are there as presenters, and so we kind of floated from one table to the next, and then the topic came up as what are you supposed to do for centers of influence and past clients around the holidays, and all these different groups of agents at these different tables started talking about freaking pumpkin pies, and I just thought it was so insane that I actually started asking a question. So how many of you guys are in similar markets? And remember, this was like, it was like in Atlanta or something, and so the chances of these guys not having the same people on their same centers of influence and past clients list was about zero. So I said, so if you're Bob, if you're dropping off a pumpkin pie at the Smith's house and you see Jane's pie sitting there in the kitchen on the stoop, right? And then as you're pulling out of the driveway, John is pulling in the driveway to drop off another pie. I mean, I'm trying to make them laugh, but what I was really trying to do is point out the insanity of what you guys think is lead follow-up and how you actually, you're trying to fake bond and fake relationship with people, but people don't want that. They don't want your damn pie. They want you to solve their problem.
No. And they get pissed when raccoons eat it all over their porch that night.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you go to your dentist, I hate going to the dentist while he's doing procedure and having him even try to talk or her try to talk.
Just
get it done, right? Isn't that what a real professional, and the way you get business, centers of influence and past clients, the way you build your database, the way you make people send you business is yes, because they like you, but they're not going to like you unless you solve their problem. They don't like you because you gave them a damn pie. They like you because you helped them buy or sell a house. The pie was not necessary. Now, we're not suggesting you don't keep up with your centers of influence and past clients. We are suggesting you call them and you can mail them things like we usually suggest once a month, a postcard or something of value.
Give them something of value, as you said, like a market report, an update, an absorption rate study. Right. So that's fine. But we're not saying go all driver on everybody. What we're talking about is just help people using good scripts.
It's an approach to business that true professionals take, and that's the reason our script is written the way it is. All right, so Julie, we then ask, I assume because you're calling me directly, you're not working with another agent, and then we can get into the weeds about levels of motivation. So continue to read the questions.
That's right. And then you talked about, you said, because remember, we also asked them how long they've been looking. You've been looking for X number of days, months, years, whatever. Interesting. Ideally, how soon do you want to be in your next home?
Okay, so those two questions are important, right? So how long have you been looking for your house? And then the form basically gives you an opportunity to say, I've been looking for, you know, fill in how many days, months, or weeks. And then if they say they've been looking for, like, I have this memorized, but I want you to read it so I don't screw it up. They say, well, I've been looking for a month. Mm-hmm. And then you say, interesting, and go back to that script.
Yes. I love this part because it says, have you seen any homes that you've liked? Yes or no? Okay. If no, what about the homes that you've seen have you not liked? So this is a little bit of a rapport building, but interesting fact, oftentimes buyers who have been roaming around looking at new construction or open house or whatever, they do have something. And the next question is, what have you decided to do about it? Because you might have a sale right there. Okay. So let's say that they didn't. Great. What about the home did you like? Based on what you liked about that home, this is what you're looking for in your next home. And then you write down what they're looking for. The home you said you liked, did you make an offer on that house? If no, would you like to make an offer? If yes, why didn't that work out? You're also finding out if they're kind of lightly working with somebody as well through that.
So what you're doing is you're basically saying, how long have you been looking? Great. While you've been looking, whether properties, have you seen any properties that you've liked, no or yes? And then if they say yes, then you ask, well, did you make an offer on that property? If they say no, and then you say, well, if the property is still available, would you like to make an offer on the property? Right? And you guys are going to find a lot of times they're going to say, yes, I would like to make an offer on the property. And I didn't make an offer on the property because I walked into an open house and the agent didn't offer to write the offer.
That's right. Nobody ever asked me to write
Ever asked me. When we were selling real estate, we sold tons of houses just because we asked that one question.
I know. It was shocking.
It was shocking.
It's just like nobody bothered to ask them. Okay, so you have to ask that. All right. Now, let's say that that didn't happen. The next part is, let me ask you, if I were to show you a house that would fit all of your needs, this is the home you're looking for on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 meaning you'd absolutely immediately buy the home, where would you rate yourself? If they say anything other than a 10, then you move on to a different question.
So if they say a 7, and you say 7, congratulations. So let me ask you, what would it take to get you to a 10?
Exactly.
You seem surprised I remember the script.
No. It's okay. And, you know, the key here, too, and I find this when agents are learning scripts, you have to actually listen to the answer. Don't be so anxious to go to the next script question because you'll have wasted your time if you don't retain what they're actually telling you.
Because here's what you're going to find. On a scale of 1 to 10, Julie,
the summary, right?
Okay,
you're looking for a home in X area. The home has to have X number of bedrooms, bathrooms, you know, a big backyard, private space, whatever, a Zoom room. Okay, so you're just summarizing, so you're showing them that you listened. We have that in the script to kind of force them to really hone in on what the buyer wants.
You guys listening, do you understand what she's saying? So at this point in the script, what we want you to do is take a breath and summarize everything that the buyer said to you and repeat it back to them so they then can hear that you listened. Subconsciously, you've already put yourself at a different level than most agents who just want to talk about their golden retriever. And so now you're going to be, you know, essentially then moving forward with the conversation. And then believe it or not, you're going to start asking motivation or close questions. And this is on your first call.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is by actually asking, you have built rapport with them. So those of you who are big rapport builders, you are doing that. Okay. So here's a good one. An assumptive question. What's the name of the lender you're working with?
That's right. Okay. Who's the lender you're working with?
And if they haven't, then you can have a lender conversation. And what price range has that lender pre-approved you for? Or what price range have they told you not to go over? Now, here's the thing. This saves so much time. Because what do agents do? Are you working with a lender? How do you like them? Yada, yada. This is, what have they told you not to go over? Because if they're not working with a lender, that question will still get that information out.
That's right.
Okay, so let's see. Have you actually gotten pre-approved or just started the process? So you've already signed the loan application? That's in there because buyers don't know the difference between pre-approved and pre-qualified. Have you signed the loan application?
Julie, is this question, this, so on a scale?
Right there.
Okay, but Mr. Buyer, so just so I'm sure about, and we didn't ask this question, is a little scroll up, Julie. So on a scale of 1 to 10, if I show you a house that's a 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath that meets all your criteria, on a scale of 1 to 10, how motivated would you be to purchase that house today, with 10 being you'd just want me to shut up and stop talking and help you fill out the contract, and 1 being you'd want us to keep looking? And then they're going to say a number. They're going to say probably 7. This is what we skipped over, right? It's just right there.
Well, you skipped over the if they're not a 10. You went into if they are 10. So
right.
If they are not, if they're anything less than a 10, even a 9, what would it take for you to be a 10?
Great. So you're a 7. So let me ask you, what would it take to get you to a 10? And that's the question you ask to find out what their motivation is. And going again, we're going back a slight half step here. But the reason you're asking that question is because you want to know if there's anything else lingering that's preventing them from purchasing this house that they claim would be a perfect fit, right? I said, if it's a 10 out of 10, checks all the boxes, where would you rate your motivation to buy the house today? If they don't say a 10, there's something else that's floating around in their head. And then you're going to find out, well, I have to see if, when pigs fly, or,
it's usually something a relocation, to do with financing, or their spouse isn't on board,
right?
Or they're not sure about the sale of their house. And you
after we
about
get married, yeah, or after we have a baby, or whatever. Okay, so now you have more information specifically on what they're looking for, whether they're working with an agent or not. You know what their motivation is. You know exactly what they're looking for.
How to make them a 10.
You know how to make them a 10. You have all the information, and you found out whether or not they had a house to sell as your second question. Now, by the way, as your second question, if they said they did have a house to sell, we want you to finish asking the buyer questions. But what we really want you to do is then use a secondary script, which we're not going to be talking about today. And we want you to pivot and start asking them seller pre-qualifying questions. And we need you to prioritize all your listing leads ahead of your buyer leads. Now, in this marketplace, obviously, it's easier to get a house sold than it is to find a house for a buyer to buy. But 6 months from now, that will not be the case. But if you don't chase that seller lead down, here's what you're going to do. If you start making the, inexperienced agent mistake, and you start treating those people as a buyer, knowing that they have a house to sell, you won't only not sell them a house, but you're going to end up basically losing the listing. They will list the house with somebody else because they didn't understand why you didn't actually aggressively pursue the listing, and they'll assume you were just a buyer's agent. Yeah. And that happens all the time because you guys are not asking you're not doing the real work of real estate and asking real drilled down questions and acting professionally.
Right. And that applies to every call, not just when it's over your magic price range where you believe that they might have a house to sell. Investors call on first-time home buyers. They might have a whole bunch of crap they want to list with you. You don't know if you don't ask, right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember our coaching clients, when they use this script, you quickly discover not just one hidden transaction. You might discover multiple hidden transactions. You could find all kinds of things. Well, I have to sell 5 rental properties first.
Yeah.
Or I'm waiting for, I have to sell, whatever. My brother and I are selling out of a farm and we're looking to put it for sale and it's worth, $10 million. And once that sells, we're going to buy 3 houses. But you are just treating that buyer lead as just one up buyer, not actually drilling down and finding out what other real estate things were circulating in their heads.
Big mistake.
Okay.
So I love this question because this is your closing question. Is there anything else I didn't ask you that I should have? Which is also a great one for listings, but is there anything else I need to know? That's just making sure that you have got all the intel. All right, so now you're going to actually answer their question. They're probably calling about price, and here's a little nuance, right? So let's say that after you've got all this information, you now know that what they called on is not in their price range.
Or it's not for sale, or it's not what they were looking for.
Right.
And right. And so you guys, some of you are thinking, especially analytical out there, are thinking, well, you never answered their question about price. It's because you were essentially pre-qualifying them and you could have said, well, listen, let me find out what else we have coming for sale that's not on the market yet. And obviously the stuff that's on the market that you might not know about, and some of the new construction stuff that you might not know about. And, obviously then based on how you answer these questions, I'll know what to send you and what information to share with you. But, and then you can say all the best houses, as I'm sure you've discovered, Mr. Seller, are selling usually within minutes of being put for sale, or magically they're put for sale at the same time they're sold. Yeah. And what's really going on there, Mr. Seller, is those actually sold before they went for sale because of, agents like me knowing where these houses were and introducing buyers like you to these properties before they hit the market. Yeah. So it's okay, Mr. Buyer, if you have an unfair advantage in the marketplace, and that's what I'm hoping I can be for you.
That's right. So perfect. This is what's going to happen next. We're going to set up an appointment for you to come into my office so we can get the process started. That would be the buyer presentation. At that same appointment, we'll see the homes that I found for you that are the closest match. I'm going to contact your lender to let him or her know that we're working together, and so we can work together to help you find your financing in the buying process, something like that, so that you're saying, hey, I'm going to work with your lender. We have a nice, tight little thing here. And you go for the appointment, and at the bottom of the script, it actually says appointment date and time so that you don't wuss out on actually closing for the appointment. Now, if they won't give you an appointment at that point, you can still circle back to, you know, what else is it going to take for you to feel comfortable and confident moving forward setting an appointment? Maybe there was something else. Maybe they just start getting started on their financing and they don't want to do anything until they know the real price.
So along those lines, as far as the financing goes, coaching clients, we have something called the Ultimate Agent Addendum. You need to use that when accepting offers on your listings, but also on the buyer side transactions, you need to use that Ultimate Agent Addendum when you're accepting lender's letter for your prospective buyers. Lenders are trained and coached to never spend that much time with a buyer until the buyer's in contract on a house. You guys don't know that. You trust your buyers or you trust your lenders are doing a good pre-qualification job. They never do a good pre-qualification job. What our Ultimate Agent Addendum does is it forces them to do a three-merge credit report, yep, to do all the verifications of employment, assets ready to close, acceptable credit, acceptable just everything. And what will happen is you'll get a lender's letter and they'll have very, congratulations, Tim and Julie Harris are qualified to buy X with this much down, with the interest rate not to go above this prime frame. This is locked in for this time. And then you're going to see, usually in the second or third paragraph, subject to verification of. That's telling you right there that lender didn't do jack and they were playing golf. They got a call from the borrower. The borrower had a 5-minute conversation with them, mm-hmm, and the loan officer basically said, what's your name? What's your email address? I'll fire you off a lender's letter. Pulled it off his hard drive, sent it to him. That was it. That's how much time. That's what most of you guys are believing are good lender's letters. Then you're surprised when you get somebody in contract that they can't close. It's because you were working with a lazy lender.
Which is why this also asks, you know, so you actually did the application?
Right.
Right? So we're already pre-programming them that we're serious about them.
We want to know in this qualification thing, what we coach you guys to do is we don't want you asking, are you working with a lender good, and then get off it. We want to know who the lender is, and we want to know what their phone number is so you can call and find out whether or not that buyer is actually done what they said they were going to do. And then the other thing is you need to explain to the buyer, it's critical in this market is any market, right, that they've actually been pre-approved with the only verification or subject to being the appraisal of the house.
And identifying the address.
Yes. Right. So that's it. So the only lender's letter.
By the way, that is absolutely acceptable how it should be done. If a lender gives you a hard time about that, it's because they're being lazy.
Right.
If an agent gives you a hard time about that, it's because they don't understand what you're trying to do, or they don't want to do the extra effort. They should both be thanking you for pushing the deal along.
Right. And so again, the language, we call it, it's all Premier Coaching Clients, go to Harris Learning, search. It's called Ultimate Agent.
Ultimate Addendum.
The Ultimate Addendum. Use that same language, whether you're representing buyers.
That's right.
And you basically call up the buyer's lender and you say, I'm going to email you or whatever something. And you have to make sure that lender's letter that you provide does not have any of this lender weasel language in it. So that when I'm working with this buyer, I know for a fact that when I present them to a prospective seller, that those people are going to be able to close. You've done your job. There's nothing that we're waiting to self-discover about this borrower. The only thing the financing is contingent on is the appraisal of the subject property. That's it. Those are the only buyers you guys should ever be working with. Trust us on that. Appraisals are going to become a massive pain in the ass in the next 6 to 12 months, and you do not want to be screwing around with a buyer that has a prospective appraisal problem. At the same time, they've got janky employment. The lenders are going to put all kinds of crazy overlays. So you might hear, well, you only have to have a credit score of 600 with 5% down and whatever, whatever. But there's no lender on the face of the earth that's not putting additional minimum standards for qualifying to obtain that mortgage on top of whatever the FHFA or Fannie or Freddie have said. So the overlays are what's going to kill your deals.
And it's already happening. I mean, I heard one client said that Wells Fargo had told him that they had been told to use 2009 underwriting standards.
What? Oh, really?
Meaning, because they had gone through the subprime thing and now they're tightening up. And so he's like, well, what is that supposed to mean? And they said, well, you know, just it's exactly what you said. Just because your client's got 20% down in a decent job doesn't mean it's a slam dunk.
Yep.
They said, you know, it's probably going to take 25 to 30%.
Self-employed people are self-employed people. Anybody that does anything in real estate, all these different little subcategories.
I mean, you're talking about entertainment now too.
Yeah, of course. You know? And the lenders aren't going to like report, okay, Bank of America now has come out with a bunch of overlays and, you know, it's going to make it even 10 times harder for any of your borrowers to get a loan here. They're not going to tell you. These are just new standards that get updated. And there's usually not even an announcement amongst the underwriters. They're just going through their checklist and they see there's a new standard. And I'll give you guys another one. We talked about this in our podcast. It was either Wells Fargo, I think it was Wells Fargo, maybe it was Wells, that made it so that you have to have $1 million in assets at Wells Fargo before you can get a $1 million, it wasn't a loan, it was a refinance. Before you can do a refinance for $1 million and above, you have to have $1 million on deposit before they will let you refinance a house that's where the mortgage after the refi is $1 million or above. Why are they doing that? Because what a lot of people did back in the shit show that was the housing crash is they did buy and bails or they did refinance and bails. So people would refinance their mortgage. You don't have to pay taxes on the proceeds from a refinance. They'd put the money in the bank and then they would basically default on their loan, stiff the, you know, the bank would now be, you know, carrying the, this paper from a defaulted loan. Yep. The house depreciates, but the borrower got all their equity out. And the other thing that they were doing is the borrower, before they defaulted on the house, would refinance, pull the equity out, then get another mortgage, use the equity from their previous house from their HELOC as the down payment on the next one, and then they'd stop making payments on the first one. It was called buy and bail. Okay?
Yeah, well, you know, you got to remember who our listeners are. Many of them have never heard of such a thing, you know?
I promise you, of the tens of thousands that will have listened to this show, like there's five. Like three that actually experienced it. Yeah,
well, I mean, that was just the tip of the iceberg of some of the wackadoodle things that went on. I remember when you and I looked at houses in Las Vegas, and we were looking, something looked vacant that looked interesting to us. We were out front, and one of the neighbors came out. Do you remember this? One of the neighbors came out, he's like, what do you want to know about that house? And we're like, well, you know, we just thought it was kind of interesting. Somebody
Oh, this was in Lake Las Vegas.
I think so. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. Each neighbor was buying the next neighbor's house, and they were all doing buy and bail so that they would buy before they stopped making the payment on the old one. Stay in the same neighborhood, lose the negative equity of the old house.
It was even more convoluted. They were buying the neighbor's house through a short sale. So they were buying it at a discount. So they were getting the equity out of their house, buying the neighbor's house through a short sale at a better price, and then they were bailing on their old one.
I mean, that's it. Now that was a product of a couple years into the housing crash.
That was probably 2010.
That didn't happen immediately. It took a little while for people to figure it out. But that is absolutely related to why lenders are using their overlays and their risk management people are saying, not this time. We're not going to let you do that. You're going to have money on deposit. So, you know, if you want to know why it seems crazy in the lending world, that's because they've been through, you know, crazy times.
And buying and bailing, guys, is legal. Doing all these things that the borrowers did back in 07 through whatever. And there's something called recourse versus non-recourse. And so a non-recourse loan, and some states have non-recourse loans as you just, that's the state law, like California. A non-recourse means if you default on your first mortgage, if it's a refinance, most refinances were then becoming a recourse. But a non-recourse means if you default on it, the lender can't go after you legally for the deficiency. Well, even last go around, even states that had recourse laws on the books. In other words, if you defaulted, like I remember in Nevada, if you defaulted on a property in Nevada, because Julie and I were looking to purchase distressed property then, and we're looking to buy short sales. If you defaulted on a short sale in Nevada, or if you defaulted on a mortgage in Nevada, and the bank ended up selling it for less than what was owed on the mortgage, and they lost, say, $50,000, legally, they could actually go after you, get a judgment, and go after you for that $50,000 loss. I think it was for up to a year.
Yeah.
But there was, and again, don't quote me on this, but I believe that there was not a single case of a single lender in a single state that actually, even if they could, were going after the borrowers for recourse on the defaulted loans. Now, be careful what I'm telling you, because even if you're in a state with no recourse, With non-recourse like California, the non-recourse goes away as soon as you refinance, then that loan becomes recourse. So these are all little nuanced things that unfortunately
they've never had to know.
Well, okay, so you guys are now listening to us and you're saying, oh my God, Tim and Julie are speaking in hieroglyphs. And yes, I know hieroglyphs are something you read, not you speak, but I'm, you know, again, a nerdy joke.
Speaking in tongues.
Yeah. Right, you're speaking in tongues. But this is all these are all the things that you're going to have to be familiar with next year. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
You're going to have to.
I mean, we are definitely seeing little inklings of all this stuff, starting with the tightening of mortgage regulations, right? That's one of them. Appraisals are coming in lower.
Yep.
Now that's a little bit of a rash of that right now. The fact that there's more expireds around means that some of that aspirational pricing that you guys were enjoying is coming to an end. So on that note, I guess you guys have some work to do this weekend. Lots of sellers to, I had similar experiences as you said, not 700 because we didn't go back that far, but in every case, I was really surprised to see how many expireds, because you know, they all think everything sells fast and furious, but it is possible to actually overprice something even in a hot seller's market, or what you perceive to be a hot seller's market, because that many expireds around tells you that it's starting to transition.
I'll suggest to all of you, if you're not excited about the opportunity that's going to be presenting itself in your near future, if you're not excited about it, you're completely and mentally and emotionally missing the boat.
Yeah.
Because all these changes are going to create huge opportunities for you to be of service to other people. There are going to be more agents, more people are getting the real estate licenses, not fewer. But how many of those agents are actually going to take the time to know even a smidge of the things we just talked about, let alone how to actually do a thorough buyer pre-qualification? You guys understand the importance of knowing how to ask questions and which order to ask the questions. You understand the importance of not just winging it, which many of you guys think is, you know, what you're supposed to do. You know, how many of you right now are going to listen to what Julie and I just said, feel overwhelmed, then now go listen to someone telling you how to run Facebook ads where you can pay, you know, 40 cents per buyer lead, and you think that somehow that's what you should be doing with your business, even after listening to what Julie and I just described to you.
I have a funny quote from one of our coaching clients about that. There was a discussion on our private Facebook page we have for our members, and one of them said, you know, I'm considering buying these buyer leads, and one of our more experienced, longer-term members, he goes, those people that you get from doing that kind of buying of buyer's leads are so far out and so non-motivated that your career will not last long enough for you to actually help them.
That's true.
You know, and I think that's, and he was speaking from experience too. So,
yeah.
You know, you got to be smart about what you're doing. There's leads everywhere.
There are leads everywhere. Guys, no problem. This is the best time to be in real estate since probably, I would say probably this is the best time to be in real estate ever, and at least Julie and I's career, because there's more opportunities, and frankly, you guys can leverage more technology and things like that to get at those opportunities quicker. And all you've got to do, you are ultimately the one thing that should make you happy, proud, encouraged, is the real work of real estate can't be, you know, delegated to AI, can't be delegated to a VA in the Philippines, can't be delegated to an underskilled agent. You can try, but it won't work. So for you to succeed in this marketplace, what your mission should be is to learn what to say, how to say it. You've got to learn the skills. And when you do, you're going to be confident. So we just told you that today and tomorrow and into the weekend is Expired Palooza. How many of you are listening? How many of you are going to go to your MLS and see how many expireds there are? How many of you are just going to brush that off and you're going to go work on your branding or your website, right? How many of you guys are actually going to take seriously the opportunity that these types of markets present? And if not, why aren't you? Be honest with yourself. Why aren't you? You know what we said is true. You know how we're saying it is true. You know the information we're delivering you is going to work. So why aren't you doing something with it? Why aren't you? You need to really drill down and be introspective about that answer. In the meantime, guys, hopefully we're helping you. We're doing our best to educate you. And obviously through the education, hopefully you'll feel motivated. But ultimately, the third part is going to be up to you, which is getting you into action. You have to get yourself into action. Julie and I are good at getting your fire started. We're the kindling. We're the match, right? But ultimately, you have to make that into a bonfire. That's what we're going to continuously try to do every single day in our coaching company or our podcasting. Anything we can do to help you guys stay the course, anything we can ever do to help you, you know you can always reach me directly. Text me at 512-758 0206. Listen, listeners, thank you for continuing to make this the number one listen to daily podcast for real estate professionals, at least in the United States. We sincerely appreciate it. It is amazing and it's wonderful to see so many of you that are embracing the message that Julie and I are putting out there with regards to a return to sanity to the real estate business. We are ending an era of all these tech companies and all these buying buyer leads and all this, you know, fake acting like you're working when you're not really working, social networking, Mickey Mouse. All of that stuff is going to weed itself out because the market's going to force all those bad ideas to be shown for what they are. And the agents that are going to be left standing, the brokers that are going to be left standing, are the ones that actually know how to get the job done, be of service to other people. The way you can do that is by knowing how to help other people solve their problems. That's your mission in life. That's what you're here on this planet to do. In the meantime, if you guys need us for anything, as always, feel free to text me directly at 512-758-0206. We'll talk with you on the show tomorrow.
This program has been a presentation by Tim and Julie Harris, Real Estate Coaching. For more information on our real estate coaching and training programs, visit our website at timandjulieharris.com. Remember to tune in weekdays at noon for upcoming shows. And until next time, thank you for listening to Real Estate Coaching Radio with Tim and Julie Harris. Thank you.